Good morning. I want to thank you all again for allowing me to come back and speak. It's always good to come up here and see so many people that I'm getting more and more fond of every time I come. This lesson to me is very personal. I started studying it just because it's the last words Jesus spoke as a human being. You know, he spoke as a resurrected Savior, and he spoke to John in a vision in Revelation. But I always thought that it was very significant for us to look into, or for me to look into, the last thing he said as a human being, and then analyze that a little bit. And maybe I'm going to go in a different direction from what you might have thought in considering these words. But if you would, turn in your Bible to John chapter 19, verse 30. I think it's just fascinating what I've learned from my study, and I hope to be able to share it with you in such a way that you'll come out edified and challenged a little bit. Jesus is on the cross. He's made several statements throughout the day. And verse 30, and I'm reading from the New American Standard, says, "When Jesus therefore had received the sour wine, he said, 'It is finished.' And he bowed his head and gave up his spirit." And for the rest of this lesson, I would like us all to keep a vision in the back of our minds of Jesus hanging on the cross, having been beaten, mutilated, tortured, embarrassed. And he's still in control because it says he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. It didn't say his spirit left him. He chose at that moment to give it up. So even through all of what he had gone through and what he was suffering and the inevitability of what was getting ready to happen, he still was in control and he gave up his spirit. And I want to look at this statement starting out from some words from a Simon and Garfunkel song. Now, how many of y'all know who Simon and Garfunkel is? Good. And I would ask that you go out to YouTube or someplace later today or tomorrow and listen to this song. I'm not even going to try to sing it. You don't want to hear that. But the words, these are not the whole words, but they're some of the words of the song. "When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry them all. I'm on your side when times get rough and friends just can't be found. Like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down. When you're down and out, when you're on the street, when the evening falls, I will comfort you. I'll take your part when darkness comes and pain is all around, like a bridge over troubled water. I will lay me down. Your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way. See how they shine. If you need a friend, I'm sailing right behind. Like a bridge over troubled water, I will ease your mind." This was the number one song of 1970. Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel were two Jewish guys from New York City. And from the mid-60s through the 70s, they had a string of hits, and this was their biggest one. Paul Simon wrote it, and I read that he told somebody later that he wrote it because He knew a friend of his that was in dire need, and he wanted to give comfort through the words of this song to this friend of his. And that's basically what it's about. There's definitely spiritual undertones in this song, and in fact, I believe Jesus could have said those words. I mean, they are definitely about a person laying down their life to help somebody who is in need. And if you look at it that way, a bridge over troubled water, that's Jesus. He's the bridge over sin for us on our behalf. The message of the cross in Jesus' life is certainly one of encouragement and sacrificial love. And so keep that in mind of one of the messages of his words, "It is finished." But that's not what I want to focus on today. I want to focus on another Simon and Garfunkel song called "The Boxer." And I don't think we think about Jesus in this way enough. We think of his sacrificial love and the way he laid down his life for his friends. But I would like us today to think about Jesus as the boxer. And these are some of the words to that song. Laying low, seeking out the poor quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know, where the New York City winters aren't bleeding me, leading me home. As you listen to this song, you can visualize a young man with dirty face, torn clothes, tattered, looking for work and can't find work. He trudges the sidewalks of the inner city and fights the cold and dreams of going somewhere. He thinks briefly of quitting and giving up and going back where he came from, something he thought he would never do. And then these words are in there. In the clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries a reminder of every blow that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame, I am leaving, but the fighter still remains. Now, I want to make clear, Jesus did not display anger and shame on the cross. So those words don't fit. But everything else about this song in regards to the boxer, I believe, is describing Jesus on that. He fought through life. I mean, he had temptations that we could only imagine. But this is a song that touches on loneliness, poverty, being homesick, being isolated, feeling mistreated and beaten down, and yet determined to persevere. And that's the part of this idea of the crucifixion that I would like us to focus on this morning. Not the sacrificial love, because I think we talk about that and we understand that pretty well. But I never thought of Jesus on the cross in terms of a persevering fighter, somebody who's beaten to a pulp and still at the end is in control and never sways from his commitment to God. I don't think there are many people like that boxer, who, though beaten down by circumstances and even losing at life by most people's standards, can just hang in there and remain. And that's what this song is about. Our tendency as humans is to quit too soon and to stop before we reach the finish line. How many people do you know who have given up on their faith because it just got too tough? To rationalize why we can't do something rather than just suck it up and plow through to the end. That's one of the messages of Jesus and the cross. This can apply to small things in our lives, like starting to rake the leaves and then quitting halfway through. I've done that. Reading a book partially and then just saying, I don't think so. Beginning a letter to somebody and then never finishing it, or then finishing it and not mailing it. Maybe a diet we've all tried and just, after a while, just too tough. I don't want to do that anymore. Or any kind of bad habit that we commit to break, we succeed for a while and then gradually slip back into our old ways. But this tendency also shows up in life's most painful areas. An abandoned child, a job hopper, a wrecked marriage, a cold faith, an unevangelized world, and apathy towards the church. And I want us to think about it from this perspective. Jesus never quit, though he was tempted. Let's go back to Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22, and look at verses 24 through 27. And we've got to remember, when we're reading these verses, he had spent two and a half years with these men, training them, showing them what love's all about, showing them how to live life. And here in these verses, Luke 22, starting in verse 24, and there arose also a dispute among them as to which one of them was regarded to be greatest. And he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who have authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you, but let him who is the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as the servant. For who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? But I am among you as the one who serves. That had to be frustrating to Jesus. after spending all his time with these disciples and teaching them about love and submission and servitude and helping others, they're still fighting among themselves about who's going to be the best, who's going to be prominent. And then go over to verse 39 of that same chapter and see what he had to deal with there. And he came out and proceeded, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples also followed him. And when he arrived at the place, he said to them, "Pray that you may not enter into temptation." And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw, and he knelt down and began to pray, saying, "Father, if thou art willing, remove this cup from me, and yet not my will, but thine be done." Now an angel from heaven appeared to him, strengthening him, and being in agony, he was praying very fervently, and his sweat became like drops of blood falling down upon the ground. And when he arose from prayer, he came to the disciples and found them sleeping from sorrow. He's beaten up emotionally here. He knows he's getting ready to suffer tremendously and die. And here his most favored disciples are just sleeping. I said from sorrow, but they're sleeping. They're not really getting what it's all about yet. And yet Jesus persevered, knowing the beating, torture, and ultimate death he was going to face. And just for a minute, let's picture Jesus hanging on that cross again. The sky's dark. The other two victims on either side of him are moaning in pain. The soldiers are gambling for his clothes. The crowd is jeering at him, calling him names. His friends have all run away. He's totally alone. Maybe even a few are crying from a distance. Maybe at times there's total silence. But it's a bad scene. And then he draws a deep breath and says, "It is finished." What was finished? That's what I would like to consider now. What was finished? And I think there's several things that were finished. The first one is God's eternal plan of redemption was finished. God's plan from the beginning of creation was to redeem man from sin and to put a plan in place. Number two, that God's message to man was finished. There would be no need for further revelation from God to man, as all prophecy had been fulfilled in Jesus Christ. All that was left was for a few men to write about what had happened, so those that were so inclined could tell others about him. But the plan of redemption was culminated and finished at the cross. God's message to man was finished when Jesus said, "It is finished." Also, Jesus' work on earth was finished. Go back to John, or over to John chapter 17, and let's look at verses 4 and 5. And here he's praying. And this chapter really, to me, is the true Lord's Prayer, if there ever is going to be designated such a thing. But in verses 4 and 5 of John 17, Jesus is speaking to the Father, and he says, "I glorify thee on the earth, having accomplished the work which thou hast given me to do. And now glorify thou me together with thyself, Father, with the glory which I had with thee before the world was." There won't be a future earthly kingdom or a thousand-year reign because everything Jesus came to earth to do was finished. He said it. He said, "It is finished." And number four, the task of selecting and training his ambassadors was finished. The Holy Spirit would soon come, as Jesus promised, and guide them into knowledge of all things, which included the building of the church. The blood had been spilt, the sacrifice had been made, the sting of death had been removed. It was over. It was finished. And because he finished, God rewarded Jesus with a special place in heaven at his right hand. And the same reward is promised to us if we finish. But we must finish. We have to do what he did, regardless of the cost. When Jesus said, "It is finished," this wasn't a cry of despair or a cry of defeat. If his hands weren't nailed to the cross, he might have raised his fist in the air in triumph, punching the sky in victory like a football player does after he scores a winning touchdown. It is finished as a statement of completion, of fulfillment, a cry of success, maybe even a cry of relief that he had gone through all of this that his Father had instructed him to do in total submission and obedience. And it was over, finally. He was beaten. He was scarred. He was humbled by evil and wrongdoing to the point of bodily death. But like the boxer, he could say, "I am leaving. I am leaving." But the fighter still remains. His example of never quitting, of finishing, is one that we need to take seriously. And not just dwell on what he's done for me. You know, like a bridge over troubled water. Well, he was also a boxer, a fighter, that took every punch the world had to throw at him, and he finished the fight. And think about some of our heroes of the Old Testament. We've been studying the book of Genesis on Wednesday night down at Anthony. And you think of the lives of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses. They had problems with enemies. They had problems within their families. They had problems with themselves, their own weaknesses and sin that they fell into from time to time. They got beat up by life. And yet they persevered. And when each of those men died, they were able to say, "I finished." And that's the example for us. Not looking at the mistakes they made. And, you know, that's an example too. The New Testament says so. That their sinfulness at times and their mistakes are examples for us so that we won't repeat them. But I think the bigger example is, regardless of what happened to them, regardless of what they did, they persevered and finished. And I think that is one of the main messages of the cross. Paul was a boxer too. Let's look at, and he even uses some of the terminology. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, starting in verse 23. "Are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. I more so. In far more labors, in far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. 1 night and a day I have spent in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys and dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among false brethren. I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights and hunger and thirst, often without food and cold and exposure. Apart from such external things, there is a daily pressure upon me of concern for all the churches. Who is weak without my being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? If I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weakness." And then go over to 2 Timothy chapter 4. And look at verses 6 through 8. And he's saying here again, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." Paul is a finisher. Life beat him up much more than any of us. And yet he persevered. He stayed strong throughout. And he finished. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 24 through 27. And he even uses the terminology of a boxer here. 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27. "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. and everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore, I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I buffet my body and make it my slave, lest possibly, after I preach to others, I myself should be disqualified. So what does all this mean to me and you personally? Because when I do a Bible study or hear a sermon, I want to know how that applies to me. What does that all this mean to me? Jesus finished on the cross. All these Old Testament guys finished with perseverance. Paul did the same thing. Applying this to real life situations, is there something in your life that you're close to giving up on? And I would say, unless it's sin, don't do it. Are you discouraged as a parent? Hang in there and work harder. Are you weary of doing good? Do more. Is your job getting you down? Roll up your sleeves and keep at it. Are there troubles in your marriage? Communicate more and try again. Are you giving in more and more to temptation? Ask God's forgiveness and fight again tomorrow. Are you sad and disappointed more than you used to be? Work on your attitude and find someone to talk to who will encourage you and guide you. Never give in. Never give up. Jesus didn't. And that's when he said it is finished, that's how it applies to me. His example of never giving up, even though they beat him to death and nailed him to a cross, he still maintained control and he finished. And that's what Jesus being a finisher should mean to us. The ultimate example of endurance, of never quitting, no matter what the price. And when we think of the price Jesus paid for each of us and for all the world, how can we justify not coming to Bible class and worship? And this is an area, you know, I need to apologize, I guess, right now. Because this is an area people are staying more and more away from, this idea of attendance. Because there's so many different reasons why people don't come. And I'm not judging anybody. But I'm just saying, when you think about what he did and the example, just coming here should be the minimum, right? How can we even think about skipping Wednesday night or Sunday morning Bible class when we understand how Jesus allowed himself to be beaten and tortured to save us from an eternity in hell? Is this how we show our appreciation and love? Is this how we show respect for his body, the church? Are we failing to edify others like we should? And remember, again, mere attendance at Bible study and worship is just the minimum in showing our faith in the Lord. And I understand that a person can live and be here every time the doors open and be lost due to some unresolved sin in their lives. So just being here is not the ticket's punch. It's not a checklist thing. Are we here with the right attitude, or am I here begrudgingly? I remember 23 years ago when we were first converted, not even before then, I grew up for 40 years thinking, you know, people would go to church, do it Sunday morning, that's it. And so when we visited the building that was up there towards Doctor's Inlet, and y'all had Bible study and worship Sunday morning, came back Sunday night, came back Wednesday night, I thought, man, I don't understand this. I played tennis on Wednesday night. I watched the second half of the Sunday afternoon doubleheader on Sunday evening. And so I asked somebody, I honestly don't remember who, but I said, why do y'all have to come Sunday evening and Wednesday night? And she said, I remember it was a woman, but I don't remember who. She said, it's not that I have to come. I want to be here. My best friends are here. I learn more about God every time I come. Where else would I rather be? And so it's not a matter of just changing our schedules around to check a checklist that we came Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday evening, or whenever. It's the attitude of wanting to learn more about God, wanting to please God, wanting to edify our brothers and sisters, and just spend time with fellow Christians. That's what it's about. It's a change from the inside, not of just trudging here just because I have to come. Look at it this way. Imagine you've been diagnosed with a severe type of cancer, and some in this room have, and many of y'all have been touched with people who have lost their lives to cancer. And the doctor says that this cancer is going to do us in unless we follow a strict regimen of radiation and chemotherapy. The doctor says you have to have 3 hours of treatment on Sunday mornings from 9 to noon. The first hour is radiation and the next 2 hours are chemo. Then you have to come back for another hour of radiation on Wednesday evening from 7 to 8. Would you even think about showing up late or skip the first hour of radiation treatment or pull the plug on chemo after 1 hour instead of staying for the full 2 hours? Would you skip out on the Wednesday evening hour of radiation because you had a busy day and just didn't feel like going? I kind of doubt it. I think if we felt like our lives were on the line, we would do everything within our power to make those treatments. We'd probably get there early and be well rested even, so that we were at our best physically, mentally, and emotionally, so that we could get the maximum benefit from each of those treatments. Weren't we all under the penalty of death due to sin? And didn't the great physician prescribe a way to cure the eternal disease and ultimate spiritual death that we all deserve? Aren't we supposed to be physician's assistants who will be an example to others of how best to follow the doctor's plan? Didn't he pay the price for us, hanging on the cross, yet give us an obligation to follow him in a specified way in order to get the most out of this treatment plan? One of those obligations is to be an active part of his body, not forsake the assembly, to edify one another and to grow in knowledge and wisdom to the very best of our ability. So how can we rationalize not fulfilling the barest minimum of requirements and just showing up? Could we honestly look at Jesus hanging on the cross, beaten and battered like the boxer, but accomplishing everything he was sent to do on our behalf, and honestly think that not attending every time we are physically able is acceptable to God? Now understand there are scriptural reasons for missing. Physically, sometimes we just can't come. Our bodies are incapable of coming here. But look at Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, verses 23 and 24. If therefore you are presenting your offering at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offering. That's an exception, isn't it? It provides that we need to put relationships and mending bad relationships before ritualistic service. Another one is in Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14, verse 5. And he said to them, which one of you shall have a son or an ox fall into a well and will not immediately pull him out on a Sabbath day? In other words, sometimes there are obligations that we just can't escape that have to be taken care of, emergency type situations that will require us to miss services. And Jesus says, that's fine. It's much like the subject of divorce. I'm really getting into some areas here, aren't I? God's rule is that he hates divorce and that marriage is to be for life. But he allows an exception in the case of adultery. But even then, divorce is not required. It's an exception to the rule. It's the same with attendance. We are to obey our elders or respect the congregation who sets the time of meeting. In order to fulfill our obligation to God, to show reverence for our Savior, to continue to increase the knowledge and edify one another, all members of the local congregation should be present every time the doors open. Of course, there are exceptions, and I'm not here to judge or guess at what might be an acceptable reason for missing. But I will say that we all should examine our attitudes when we miss. Are our hearts in the right place during those times? And if Jesus came for judgment during a Bible study or a worship service, and we were somewhere else, what would Jesus say? That's what we need to think about and be honest with ourselves about it. Do we have the boxer mentality to persevere? Is it always easy to get here on time or even show up at all? Not at all. And I understand that. Life happens and things get in the way. Satan is crafty, and he'll take innocent, normally good things in our lives and help us twist them in our minds into things that will, over time, undermine our faith. But remember, a finisher is not a person without wounds, weariness, and problems. A real finisher is probably more bloody and more scarred than most people because he knows how to fight through the hard times. Mother Teresa once said, God didn't call us to be successful. God called us to be faithful. I would modify that by saying that the level of our faithfulness is the true measure of our success. The fighter, like our Savior, is wounded and full of pain. What sacrifices are we making for Jesus? Are we a spiritual boxer, or are we only going at it halfway? Boxers who only train halfway get their brains beaten out. And our spiritual opponent is Satan. What chance do we have if we're not all in? We have none. Heaven is reserved only for those who endure. Turn to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10 and look at verse 22. And you will be hated by all on account of my name, but it is the one who has endured to the end who will be saved. The finisher. James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And then go down to verse 12. Blessed is a man who perseveres under trial, for once he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. And then over in Revelation chapter 2, verse 10, this is part of the letter to the church of Smyrna. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to cast some of you into prison, that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. But what that implies is, if we're not faithful unto death, we're not getting the crown of life. So all of these verses are talking about finishing. Just like Jesus said, are we going to be able to stand up there on judgment day? Or when we breathe our last breath and say, I've finished, like Paul. We will probably never have to die for our faith. We'll probably never have to suffer a whole lot for our faith. There are people around the world today who are doing that. And it seems to be increasing. Jesus and most of his disciples did, however. As far as I understand, the only apostle who didn't die a violent death was John. But they all suffered for their faith. But we need to be ready to do so if necessary. And one of the lessons of the cross is that Jesus said it is finished because he had truly done every single thing his Father asked of him while on earth. He was entitled to say that. It is finished. In Matthew 10:38, Jesus said, "He who does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me." Can you visualize for a minute picking up a cross? I mean, we probably, most of us have all seen the Passion of Christ. And that was a pretty, I think, brutal, accurate description of what Jesus went through. And the cross he carried was just a big chunk of wood that weighed probably a few hundred pounds. But visualize for a minute literally doing what Jesus says we have to do. Is there any way he could have carried anything else when they put that cross on his back? No, there wasn't. When we take up the cross spiritually, as Jesus commands, we have to drop everything else we're carrying in order to manage that cross. Do we sometimes think we can carry other things along and make it? Well, I'm going to carry the cross over here, and I'm going to carry some other stuff over here. I don't think we'll make it doing that. Do we get our priorities mixed up and sometimes lay down the cross because we somehow think other things are more important and we want to carry them for a while? Whatever things in our life are keeping us from picking up that cross and carrying it like Jesus did, I think he's calling for us to drop them and let them go. We simply can't carry anything else but the cross of our faith. No matter how much we want to rationalize the importance of something else in our lives, let's not fool ourselves. When we make the decision to take up our cross and follow Jesus, we're saying we're all in. We've all made that promise that we're all in. And when we allow things in life to take precedence over our faith, we're dropping the cross and all of a sudden we're all out. We probably don't think so at the time, but I think Jesus clearly taught that we can't straddle the fence and we can't have it both ways. At least we can't have it both ways and live up to the standards of the ultimate boxer, Jesus Christ. When our life is over, will we be able to say, "It is finished," and really mean it the way he did? Not that we were perfect like him, but that we gave it our all and did everything we could in his service. Are we like the boxer whose faith is such that life may batter us and bruise us and bloody us, but the fighter still remains? If anybody needs to respond in any way, please come forward as we stand and sing.